Megan McBride, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thanks so much for having me.
So by all accounts, Nicholas Ravinsky was a quiet neighbor. He graduated from a public high school in Warwick and had apparently converted to Islam. How does a person in that situation come in contact with radical views such as those espoused by the Islamic State in Iraq?
There are actually a lot of ways in 2015 to come in contact with the actual propaganda that we see coming out of ISIS. One of the principal ways we see is via Twitter. So it's been estimated that ISIS has something like 45,000 active Twitter accounts, I think, in 2014. Now, those aren't all different users. Some are users having multiple accounts at the same time. But I think it's estimated that almost 20% of those accounts where the users are selecting English as their principal language. So there's been a real sort of concerted effort on the part of the group to reach out and provide English language connectivity to people who are interested. Similarly, ISIS has a very glossy, very high quality online magazine that they published called Dabiq. And it's specifically designed to reach out to people who are in the United States and who are in English speaking countries and who are interested in some of the themes and ideas that ISIS is propagating. ISIS is putting forth a sort of utopian worldview. They're offering something slightly different than what Al-Qaeda offered. They've sort of identified a homeland and they're encouraging people to come. As much as they're sort of putting forth images of violence and sort of horror and atrocity, they're also putting forth images of domesticity and civility. We see pictures of ISIS-supported nursing homes, orphanages, ISIS public services being provided on the street. They're offering a more sort of positive image for the future. Come here, come join us. And you'll be part of a movement that's moving in a direction that you can imagine, a really great place to live, to raise a family, that kind of a thing.
Federal authorities say Nicholas Ravinsky was active on social media, including YouTube and Twitter, making positive comments about videos on jihad and making weapons. Several look to be produced by the Islamic State. How do you go from online content to radicalization?
That is a incredibly complicated question that I'm not sure has a really easy answer. I know that the research in radicalization sort of suggests that there are both push and pull factors, right? So a pull factor would be a compelling reason that you might want to join a group. So you join a group because they offer a comradeship. You join a group because they offer a vision of a future that you find appealing. And a push factor would be something unpleasant in your current life that sort of pushes you to join this group. So, for example, for a number of young men in the Middle East, dissatisfaction with their governments, right? Dissatisfaction with American policies in the Middle East, right? Something pushing them away from the status quo. So to answer the question of how someone like Nicholas Ravinsky goes online and is radicalized, you'd have to identify, both the push and the pull factors. What are the factors in his life that made his current existence in Warwick sort of dissatisfactory? And similarly, what specifically did he find appealing about ISIS?
We're speaking with Megan McBride, who researches religion and radicalization at Brown University. What is it about social media? Some people may think that something as drastic as radicalization would require that human contact that you're not getting online.
Research has shown since, I think, at least the early 2000s that online communities are as good at sort of galvanizing people as in-person communities. This is a little bit surprising, but it turns out to be partially true. Another thing that's interesting is that we do see one-to-one contact via social media in a way that we didn't see it before. So these one-on-one communications are happening. They're just happening in a slightly different manner than I think what we've sort of all come to imagine, which is a radicalized imam in a mosque radicalizes a small group of people. I don't think that's the conventional necessary. That's the only approach that we see anymore. And the overwhelming majority of imams simply aren't radicalized anyway. So that would be an ineffective. Whereas if you're looking for ISIS on Twitter and you find ISIS on Twitter, you're guaranteed to be talking to someone who shares your opinions.
After all the media coverage of things like the Boston Marathon bombing trial and stories about Americans traveling to the Middle East to fight for radical Muslim groups, it seems to contribute to a public perception that there may be something about Islam that is susceptible to extremism. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think that there's anything about Islam that makes it specifically susceptible to radicalization. But I do think that the way we typically engage with this in public conversations might lead to that impression. I think I read a statistic that suggested that less than 1 in 100,000 Muslims had radicalized since 9/11. Those are incredibly low numbers. And it's important to keep in mind, too, that there are not only do the overwhelming majority of Muslims not radicalized, but many, many, many are speaking out against these acts of radicalization. And sometimes those statements aren't covered by the media in the same way.
Well, we've been speaking with Megan McBride, a graduate student at Brown University, researching radicalization, terrorism, and religion. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks very much for having me.